Spirit Radio Podcasts.
It is Saturday Magazine with Jackie. Depending on what part of the country that you're living in, you may have started to notice, because some of the weather's getting brighter and sunnier, and some of our seasonal migrant birds are returning to our gardens and our surroundings. And I believe that from next week, we'll be seeing a lot more of them. And on the line now to tell us who to look out for, I have Oren O'Sullivan from IrishGardenBirds.ie. You're so welcome to the show this morning, Oren.
Thank you, Jackie. I'm delighted to speak to you on this lovely morning.
Oh, it is such a great morning. And I have noticed so many more birds coming into the garden. I've really noticed a lack of birds this winter, and they really seem to go somewhere. And all of a sudden, they're starting to peek back in. Tell us about some of the main species that we can expect to see coming back, and where have they been all winter?
Indeed. I suppose the one of the iconic spring birds, two really, but one is the swallow, and it's very common and widespread. And they've started returning. They come from Africa and southern Europe, where they spend the winter. So they're coming back up to us. They start arriving in small numbers from the very end of March, and that will continue right through to April and May. And in the last week, with a little bit of southerly in the wind, that helps them up, because they'll stage their journey and they'll stay down in Spain if there's northerly wind blowing. And we've had very pleasant weather, but it's been quite northerly for the past few weeks. So they wait and... But if they can get up here, they can stage their run up. They come up through the continent and take the shortest sort of sea journeys so they can get here. And they're back sort of twittering around their familiar sheds and barns.
That's lovely.
Lovely to see and lovely to hear, obviously.
Yeah.
That's the difference in spring. There's so much to hear as well as to see.
Absolutely, absolutely. And who else is so the I believe too that it's we're starting to have look out in the garden, and we're seeing them come back. But how do we attract them to the garden? So you're telling us they're going to be coming back soon in bigger numbers. How do we get them to come into the garden? Because I really, honest, this winter, I have found the birds have really disappeared on me, and I'm like, where are they? They seem to be coming back very slowly.
Okay, I mean, it varies from place to place. People come to me and say they're eating us out of house and home, because I love a bag of that, please,
Maybe they don't like my food I'm leaving out. Maybe that's my problem.
Now, often a cat or a dog can affect things either.
We got a dog in the winter months.
So do I, and actually he barks at jackdaws and stuff, so we allow him to do that. But he leaves the little ones alone. But at this time of the year, you can help them. If you have a nest box up in cover in your garden, that'll encourage blue tits to stay around, and when they have young, they'll come to the food as well. Bird food, we sell bird food all year round, but people go a little bit easier on it at this time of the year, because all the winter flocks, if you had them, they disperse because birds are now breeding, so they have territories, very small territories, things like blue tits and so forth. So the numbers go down, and the food changes too, because they like more insect food for the young.
Okay.
But I mean, I supply dried insect food here in the garden, in the feeders for the birds. I mix it in with the sunflower hearts. And it's very popular, and it's produced in County Meath on a farm, which is terrific.
Lovely.
Dried grubs. Not everybody's taste, but we'd probably all be eating them in 20 years' time. The birds love them anyway, and robins in particular. So they're all out there at the moment, but they have territories, and you'll hear the territories. Robins are singing. That's because they're actually telling the next one to go away,
Get out of here, buddy.
There's only room for one pair here, So, and in addition, as I say, you'll have blackcaps, which is warblers, come up from Africa as well. They'll be around the garden and along the hedgerows, and the swallows are the big one, and house martins, the little black and white birds that nest on the apex of your roof.
Yes.
They make a little mud nest on the outside. They're very popular with some people and less popular with others. They don't like the droppings, you can mitigate things like that. I always say, if you didn't have swallows, swifts, and house martins, you probably wouldn't be able to sit outside in the evening, or because of the insect life, they actually, and bats, of course, get through thousands of small insects.
I know. There's something good about even the bats. So
absolutely, yeah.
And I understand, Oren, there's another very distinctive bird, and this is always, I've always kind of wondered about this myself, the cuckoo. And
yes.
I believe they're more common in the West than the East. But sometimes I'll think, oh, is that a cuckoo? But then it turns out it's only a dove or a pigeon. So how do you actually tell the difference between them?
Well, the best thing, they are gray like a pigeon, they're a bit smaller. The best way, cuckoos are coming back to us now. They're quite relatively scarce, as you say, more common in the West in rougher areas or more marginal farmland and stuff like that. But it's to hear them, the cuckoo call, and that's the male advertising. That you'll hear, you could hear today, tomorrow, they're back. A few records from around the country, as you say, up along the West Coast in particular. I'm listening out here in Wicklow. It sort of makes your spring to hear a cuckoo. And it's a human sound we can replicate, you know.
Yeah.
So there's something endearing about it, and they're iconic in the farm landscape. And of course, they're kind of a very notorious species because they lay eggs, but they don't build a nest, and they basically adopt or they use a foster parent. They deposit an egg, the female deposits an egg in a nest of something like a meadow pipit, which is a common bird, certainly in the West as well. Small brown bird, much smaller than a cuckoo. So the cuckoo has this strategy of, the parasite nests of other birds. And the parasitic element is they put their own egg in.
Sneaky.
Yes,
absolutely.
Well, they're called common sheets as well. I don't like putting human quality on birds. Nature is in balance, and you know, it works its way through these things. And
of course.
There's only one cuckoo, I suppose. But what happens is the female lays an egg in a meadow pipit's nest. It observes them first and waits till the meadow pipit's eggs, their nest is kind of complete. And it removes one egg. Very sneaky.
Sneaky.
Puts its own one in, which actually is designed to mimic the eggs of the meadow pipit. It looks the same, maybe a little bit bigger. So the foster parents adopt it, you know, generally.
Wow.
They take it on. And the problem really only starts here because the cuckoo is a bigger bird. And as the cuckoo, if it hatches, it'll actually eject the other nestlings. And
oh, no.
You can turn away now. It's not too much. And the meadow pipits have adopted this bird. It actually outgrows the nest. They're stimulated by the cuckoo. They have an orange and red mouth. Feed me, feed me. And they dutifully feed the cuckoo and raise it as their own. The nest wouldn't take if you did the meadow pipits as well. The one cuckoo actually keeps the two meadow pipits going all season, if you like. That's certainly the cuckoo. Then it actually leaves the country quite early. It leaves early in summer because it's, if you like, nothing to do. The young are you know, raised by the host species, and they go back to Africa very early. Also because they feed on caterpillars. So their prey is quite a short season here. But the young cuckoo, which is pretty notorious at this stage, it has to find its way back down to Africa completely on its own by instinct.
Wow.
You know, the adults are gone, so fend for yourself, young fella.
This boggles my mind. Like, this could be like, I think we need to send them for counseling.
It's high drama, all right.
Very high drama. This could be the next Netflix show. I see it coming, Oren. You could narrate this Netflix documentary. It's been so great chatting with you this morning, Oren, and finding out what birds we can be looking out for. And I've definitely got some new information I never had before. And and tell people, just before we wrap up here, I know you have more information on your website. Tell us about your website so people can go and look at that.
Yeah, with irishgardenbirds.ie, we have fact sheets and all sorts of information, and we've also the goods for garden birds and garden wildlife in general. And you know, the information pages will cover things like cuckoos and nest boxes, all the various things you can do to enjoy what we have in our gardens. Much more important these days because we're spending time in them.
Oh, absolutely.
Fantastic weather anyway to celebrate.
It's the right time of the year, absolutely. Oren, thanks so much for coming on this morning.
Thank you, Jackie.
Thank you so much. All the best. That's Oren O'Sullivan from irishgardenbirds.ie. We thank him so much for coming on today. Spirit. We're really enjoying some lovely weather recently, haven't we, Ben? I mean, it's just so nice. And it's nice to see the sunshine and to feel a bit of heat again, getting into the bones. But it's also the time when pollen starts to rise and the pollen count starts to go up. And those who suffer from hay fever, that would be me, might start to experience some symptoms. So on the line now to give us some tips and advice in prevention and treatment, I have Dr. Sheehan from Allergy Ireland. You're very welcome to the show this morning.
Hi, Jackie, and thanks for having me on.
Oh, it's great to have you here. And it is the time of year. It's a beautiful time of the year. But I even noticed this morning when I woke up, my nose was starting to run, and I was like, oh, no, here we go, here we go, here we go. So what are, I'm just curious, like, I know everybody has different sensitivities, but what are some of the worst offenders that make the pollen count so high this time of year?
Yeah, so I suppose, like, one in five people in Ireland suffer from hay fever, which is pretty significant, really, and at least one in five, maybe more. From about March, the beginning of March, all the way through to September, we'll see people suffering with hay fever. So sort of March, April time, it tends to be tree pollens, and so it can be general sort of tree pollen mix. So the usual trees, or often it can be very specific, so it's birch tree pollen. So you'll see silver birch trees around Dublin a fair bit, and they have quite a sticky pollen, so that can be a real offender at this time. Now, you mentioned sort of symptoms starting right now with this glorious weather, so I suppose the grass pollen count is the main offender and the one we're all sort of used to talking about.
Yes,
and that's beginning to show itself now, sort of from about the beginning of May, and that can sort of continue on through, we would usually have said through to the end of July, but I mean, depending on the type of summer we're having, it can go on a little longer as well.
And what are the main hay fever symptoms that people tend to experience? Like this morning, I noticed my nose was starting to run, and I was like, uh-oh. I don't have a cold. What is this?
What's happening? No, it's the, exactly. So runny nose, sneezing, itchy eyes, itchy ears, itchy nose, even sometimes an itchy mouth or throat, some people will feel. Beyond that then, depending on, you know, the severity of symptoms, some people get a very, very blocked, congested nose and even start to develop sinus pressure or heaviness and headaches that go sort of with that. And I suppose from the point of view of sort of quality of life during that period, fatigue will be up there as one of the big symptoms, and that can really be very debilitating.
I didn't
for children
realize
and
that.
Adults.
I didn't realize that fatigue.
Fatigue,
well, like it makes
four
sense.
Out of five people, would complain of fatigue, or you know, just feeling a bit more exhausted, their energy's down, concentration's low, and even mood can be a bit affected during that time as well for some people.
That's very interesting now. Now you've got me thinking.
I know, yeah.
I can excuse all my bad behavior due to hay fever.
Well, that's it, yes.
Oh, yeah. And does it affect children more than adults, or is it about the same?
No, it's about the same. Yeah. I suppose, unfortunately for children, it can be very difficult for them to actually verbalize what symptoms they're feeling. So it can make it a little bit more tricky to establish what's going on.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, essentially, you know, both children and adults are affected. I would say about 90% of asthmatics actually do suffer with allergic rhinitis or hay fever symptoms, and that can exacerbate their asthma symptoms as well. So
course,
it's really important in that cohort of people that we're getting on top of their hay fever symptoms.
Yeah, and I know you run a clinic that offers allergy testing. Does that how does that help? And I know your website has lots of advice as well too. So I want to make sure you tell us how people can get in touch for more information.
Oh, perfect. Yeah. So our website is allergy-ireland.ie, and like you said, look, there's loads of information there, but from the point of view of allergy testing, so the main way that we test our patients would be skin prick allergy testing, which is a really simple test. We get the results within about 15 minutes, and it's just a matter of putting little droplets onto the skin and a tiny scratch over them, so no needles. And basically we're trying to ascertain which allergen or which allergens they're allergic to. So it could be tree pollen or like that birch pollen, grass pollen. And then don't forget, there are other sort of perennial allergens that people are allergic to, like dust mite or animal dander, like dog or cat or horse. Moldy spores as well can be a trigger for some.
And I suppose there's lots of different things, medications, different techniques and things people can do.
Yeah, so from the point of view of management, I suppose there's a non-medical and or non-medication, I mean, and the medication. The non-medication would be sort of avoidance measures, like monitoring the pollen count during hay fever season, knowing when it's high. If it's high, ideally don't be out and around on grass, but if you are, particularly for an extended period, come in, shower, wash your hair, change your clothes, make sure you get that pollen off you.
Yeah.
Wrap around sunglasses to keep the eyes protected, and don't have clothes on the line on high pollen count days as well. Smoking, just to sort of mention smoking, it can worsen hay fever symptoms. It's really important, you know, if possible, think about stopping. And that does include passive smoking or even vaping, you know, particularly around kids in the house. It's important to have a think about smoking cessation, you know. And then outside of that, we've got salty water, the saline rinses and sprays, which can be really good at just clearing out the nose and emptying out whatever mucus is sort of sitting inside there as well, causing some symptoms. not a nice conversation topic for a Saturday morning.
Absolutely.
It's real. We make it real.
Yeah, exactly. Medication-wise, then, so, I mean, before talking to your doctor about it, your pharmacist can recommend some antihistamines, so either liquid form for children or tablet form for adults. Decongestant sprays or tablets can be helpful, but should only be used for a few days, like definitely less than a week, because they can, you get rebound symptoms with those. And then there are a couple of eye drops that can be really effective as well, that your pharmacist can talk to you about, like Opticrom or antihistamine eye drops. And then really beyond that, look, I mean, when you come in to talk to, whether it's your GP or coming to an allergy clinic, we can talk about different sprays and drops, and there's loads of different medications that we can try. So, but what's really important to be aware of are that we have some sort of long-term ways to manage these allergies. So, for example, we have immunotherapy, and that would be where you take a little tablet with, say, for example, grass pollen in it, and you take it every day over a three-year period, and you gradually build up a resistance to grass pollen. So it's a really, really effective way of managing hay fever, and that's suitable from the age of six. And then we have light therapy as well, called rhinolite. So that's a sort of non-medication route, and that's where we shine UV light into each nostril, and we do that twice a week over a four-week period, and you gradually remove the allergy cells from the nasal cavity, and that can be really effective.
So basically, people don't have to stay miserable. There are ways to deal with hay fever. That's great news. That's great news. So it's it's allergy-ireland.ie. You've given me some hope. I appreciate it so much. And let's hope everyone can reduce those symptoms and be able to enjoy this nice weather that we're having and enjoy the summer. Absolutely.
Exactly.
Absolutely. Dr. Sheehan from the Allergy Ireland Clinic, thank you so much for coming on today.
Not at all. Thanks a million, Jackie.
Really appreciate it. So there is hope, guys. That is so good to know. Allergy-ireland.ie. Dr. Sheehan there from the Allergy Ireland Clinic. So wonderful to hear those good tips.
Thanks for listening to our Spirit Radio podcast. Don't miss out. Subscribe today. Find out how at spiritradio.ie.